This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Charles Maynard. He's author of the new book, Adventures of a Small Town Doctor. He will be at Collected Works Bookstore this Saturday, the 12th of September at 6 in the evening. It's a benefit for KSFR. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. How are you?
I am very happy because I read this book last night and I laughed out loud. It was so funny and it was so interesting about your work when you graduated from med school. The deal... I love how you start the book. You say you always wanted to go to med school, and then when you got in, you'd realize that you'd never thought about how to pay for it. So
never,
what did you do?
Never occurred to me until I got the letter from the, and I was going private, not public school, with what was required for the tuition, and right then I realized I'd forgotten to plan for that. Luckily, the government had a program, well, they still do, called the National Health Service Corps, where doctors are given full rides through medical school, full scholarship, and a living stipend in exchange for going to an underserved area and practicing 1 year for every year they supported you.
And so how many years did that end up being that you worked in this small town?
Little more than three. Okay. Almost four, yeah.
And so you went to medical school, and then you got sent to a small town that we'll call Benton.
Correct.
Not its real name.
Not its real name.
Here in New Mexico.
Correct.
Now, you were already a New Mexican?
Yes, I'm born and raised in Albuquerque. I actually joined the program hoping to come to Santa Fe because La Familia is a National Health Service Corps provider site. So that was always my plan to wind up here. I wound up someplace a little different.
It reminds me a little bit of a TV show that was on in the early 90s called Northern Exposure.
That was about the same program.
Yeah.
If you watch the pilot, yeah, he was on the exact same program, but he got to go to Alaska.
Yeah, and he was a super New York dude,
right.
Very urban dude, and thinks he's going to be in Anchorage and ends up in this tiny town. And I have to say that in some ways, the chapters of your book reminded me, not so much of that, but kind of like a 1950s sitcom where bad things happen, but it all came out okay because of the good doctor.
Well, they all came out okay. I don't know how
Except
much
sometimes.
It was because of the good doctor, but it was an experience. You finish your residency training, and then you get sent, and you're still wet behind the ears, no practical experience, and all of a sudden, at least in my case, I was the only doctor in the whole county. No hospital, no backup, no nothing.
And really, I mean, you were being asked to do things that you weren't even trained for, like delivering not only babies, but calves?
Taking care of dogs that have been shot by their nearsighted hunting owners. The assumption in a small town is if your name is doctor, you know how to do everything a doctor can do. And of course, that's not true, but you get an experience. And I couldn't have picked a better learning experience. I'd never do it again, but it was an education.
Well, it's the kind of education where you really have the opportunity to practice, I mean, the widest possible range of medicine, because there's probably cases coming into a clinic like that that you wouldn't see in a regular city.
Oh, no, we could see a kid with an earache 1 minute and then major trauma off the interstate the next and have to take care of both of them with an equal amount of competence.
One of the things, speaking of earaches, is that you encountered some folk remedies, and some of them were not necessarily so helpful.
No, but the one you're reminded of was very interesting to me. When I started practicing there, I was seeing kids, 3 and 4, with earaches, and they had burns around their ears. on the outside, and I had decided that it was a sign of child abuse. And then when I saw four or five different kids with it, I thought, there must be a cult operating here. I found out what it actually was an old-fashioned treatment for ear infection, where grandmothers, abuelas, would roll up a cone of newspaper, shove it in a kid's ear, and set it on fire. The idea being, if there was an infection inside, it would pull it to the outside. Now, that's anatomically impossible, but the problem with it was the grandmothers would get distracted with the phone or television and not pull the cone out, and it would burn the child's head.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
What, I mean, when you are in that position as the small town doctor, and you're respected, but you're also new in town, you're an outsider, what is your role? Like, can you say to the grandmothers, please don't burn your children's ears anymore?
No. No, yeah, and you hit on something that I didn't really talk about much, but I was an outsider. Anybody that wasn't born in Benton was an outsider. And so you're constantly battling with that and acceptance, and on top of trying to be all things to all people, you're trying to go along with local custom.
Right, right. And so you arrived in Benton. You were a young doctor. This was your first opportunity to really practice medicine. You were promised one set of things. You got there. It didn't quite look like...
No. The house was supposed to be a small farm, and it was a small shack. And the clinic, which was supposed to be a new modern clinic, was actually an old portable classroom that had sort of been refigured for the clinic. Once I got there, we reconfigured it again and had an emergency room and made the best use out of it.
Now, one of the things about small towns, and I guess you have this everywhere, but when you're in a small town, everybody knows it, is that you've got the town characters. And some of those characters are on the... you know, in law enforcement, some of them are like the town drunk. And then there's Crazy Freddy.
Crazy Freddy. I have to remember which one was Crazy Freddy. Yes. Freddy was a highway patrolman in Benton. He was with we know we're in New Mexico. He was with the New Mexico State Police. And he had been stationed in northern New Mexico in a fairly plum assignment. And one day his supervisor told him if he could go ahead and arrest five people they had warrants for, he could have the rest of the day off. So Freddie thought it through, went home, got his regular car, left his police car at home, went to the first house where there was one of the fugitives, knocked on the door. When the guy opened the door, Freddie hit him with the bat, knocked him out, carried him, and put him in the back seat of his car. Then he drove to the second person's house, did the exact same thing. 3 hours later, he came back to the station with five unconscious people in the back seat of his car and turned them in, and that's how he wound up permanently exiled to Benton. He was given a vacation without pay and sent down to where we were. First time I met him was at a wreck in the middle of the night on a mountain road. And I looked in the back of his police car and there was a deer. And he claimed that he had found it on the road. But he was known for hunting, whether it was in season or not.
So he'd just gone out with his police arms and...
Right.
Shot a
deer right before the wreck. You could tell right before he went. But it worked out well because he was in the neighborhood where the wreck was. Otherwise, he might have been an hour away. So his hunting helped.
And there's quite a bit about law enforcement in this book. There always have been, but here there in small Benton, New Mexico, some really aggressive, crazy cops.
There were, and it was because it was on the interstate, they were pretty busy. And I took care of the jail, and I took care of the police, and I went to the scenes, and I was also the photographer because I was the only one in town that had a camera, 35mm. But my first experience, they called me to the jail. Somebody was having a heart attack, and they let me in the back and it was in a big population cell with about 30 people. And I ran back where the guy was on the bunk, and I noticed that the two officers were laughing at me. And I took care of the patient, got him out, and I asked them afterwards why they were laughing. They said nobody had ever been stupid enough just to run into the population cell before.
Well, it sounds like the population in the local jail was not exactly the toughest group of people ever. I mean, they would let him out to play softball games.
Oh, absolutely. Or they'd let him out to wash my car. My office was across the street from the jail, and there'd be a knock at the back door, and it would be somebody in an orange jumpsuit asking for my car keys and tell me the sheriff had sent him over to wash the car. One time, that got a little embarrassing, because after he washed the car, there's another knock at the door, and because of a long story, I wound up carrying a gun with me at night, and I left it in the car. And the guy in the orange jumpsuit was at the back door with my gun in his hand, and he handed it to me and said, "Doc, you got to be careful where you leave these. You never know who will get their hands on them."
Why were you issued a gun?
I was issued a gun because I had no problem seeing people at night that I didn't know that were coming from off the interstate. I'd see them by myself in the office, and one night wound up seeing somebody that had just killed a doctor in another state. And from that point on, the sheriff was insistent that if I was going to see patients at night, I had to carry a gun. I often wonder what some of the people that saw me after that thought, because he said I had to wear it on the hip and he'd come check. People from out of town coming through with a medical emergency and a doctor came in with a six shooter on his hip, they must have thought they were in the real old West.
I mean, it's crazy. You have a weapon and you're a healer at the same time.
Yeah, I was always afraid of having to shoot somebody and explain that.
It's interesting, though, because in that particular case where the guy came off the interstate and was threatening, that's part of a problem that is still ongoing, which is prescription pill addiction.
A major, major problem now. I was adamant when I was a younger doctor, particularly, about not prescribing controlled substances. And one reason was, in the middle of nowhere, I didn't want to get a reputation, have a lot of people dropping by. I didn't want dropping by. So tended not to use them too much.
Now, you did use a drug that you actually invented called Cibaquil.
True.
Tell us about Cibaquil.
True. One of the best drugs ever known to man. It's a plain capsule with powdered sugar in it. I didn't like to prescribe tranquilizers, and there were a number of patients coming to me for them. This was a time when Valium came out. It was on the cover of Time and Life, and everybody thought that they needed to have tranquilizers, and I just always felt, still do, that it might be better to talk through a problem rather than throw a drug at it. So the pharmacist one day said, "Why don't you give them a placebo?" And he told me several months later he was kidding, but I thought it was a great idea. So we made these Cibaquil caps that had nothing in them and gave them to patients with a story about how strong it was and how they couldn't take it with other medicine or drink, and they had to call me before they took an aspirin, and it worked like a charm. At one point, I had most of the county on it, and the whole place just changed.
And it was complete. It was powdered sugar.
Powdered sugar.
There was, and it's so funny, the power of placebo was such that somebody took a whole bottle and ended up in the emergency room overdosed.
In a coma, yes.
What is that?
That's what I said. I love the placebo response. I'm a placebo responder. You can tell me there's nothing in it, it'll still work. So I don't know how much of modern medicine is still placebo. I have a suspicion it's a lot more than we want to admit.
I had a friend who, he wasn't a doctor or anything, but he worked in the jail in Kodiak, Alaska.
Oh my.
And he was 6'9", and he was very gentle. And that made him a really great jailer, because nobody would mess with him because he was so tall, but they liked him because he was so gentle. But there were a lot of people there with really bad problems, and he... And the, I guess, whoever the medical person was on staff, invented this thing called Obacalp, which was a capsule. That's, of course, placebo spelled backwards.
Right.
And it worked. And people would, you know, beg for it. They would say, please, doc, give me some more of that Obacalp.
Oh, and they love the Cibaquil. And we were aware of Obacalp. That's been around a while. And so we wanted something different. So we came up with Cibaquil, different color. And I don't know if the Obacalp had the powdered sugar or just... flour in it. There's no telling.
Yeah, there's no telling. But you even came up with the half dose of the Cibaquil and then the time release.
Oh, we had to, because the first group of patients that came back said it worked great for their nerves, but it was too strong. They couldn't get off the couch. They couldn't get to work. So that's when we came up with the half strength. And they liked that. That was a good drug, but they had to take it every 4 hours. So we came up with the time release. So
which was like just a little...
We
you
took
know, sugar
little candy
pellets.
Pills, yeah, just like a contact. We took the little colored candies and threw in one side and the powdered sugar in another. I was going to get rich making those because there's no downside, there's no side effects, and it was cheap to make. But after the lady overdosed on them, I decided against it.
We're talking to Charles Maynard about his book, Adventures of a Small Town Doctor. So you did this... for several years, and you dealt with all kinds of people there. You made some friends, and you, like, what was your status in the community by the time you left?
Boy, that's a good question. Much more accepted, of course. Not by then, I knew everybody, because in a small town, you meet everybody, and I wound up taking care of most of them, so... it was a little deeper relationship than just somebody you meet in the grocery store. I have never been back. It's been 30 plus years, and I have not been back.
Oh my goodness.
To Benton.
Are you going to present the book there?
I think so. Yeah, I'm hoping to.
I would imagine that if so many of the people who you met were born and raised there, their children will still be there.
They should be. I figured out the last patient I delivered who was in the office one Friday morning has got to be in her 30s by now. So they're getting older. And most of the people that are mentioned in the book, the sheriff and the mayor, those people are long, long gone.
You, of course, as a doctor, had to deal with what pretty much every doctor has to deal with, and that is losing patients. And... The very first chapter of the book is completely hilarious because the first patient you lost basically, what was it, somebody called you and...
She was dead before I ever had my medical license. They didn't move real fast on anything in Benton, and this woman had been sick actually since before Friday, which was the day I got my license, and I was called to see her Monday morning and she was very dead.
And they said... can you go check on Granny and try to figure out what's wrong with her? She's hard of hearing.
Right, and I figured out right away when I saw her what was wrong with her. I had that good medical training. I figured it out. She was dead, and I don't mean let's maybe start CPR dead. She was... She should have called me a week ago dead.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Yeah.
But then there were other ones that were very painful, like a 12-year-old girl who... succumbed for reasons that nobody could ever figure out.
And that case still stays with me. She was perfectly healthy. I had taken care of her the whole time I was there, and she just was... something wasn't right on Saturday, according to her mom, and by Monday she was in a university hospital and did not survive, and we never did know what she died from.
When you have cases like that, what do you do with them emotionally? I mean, do you fret about, I wish I could have saved her? She was in that case, I guess she was in somebody else's hands.
Right, but even so, you look back, did you do everything right? And in that case, I did, because I sent her straight to a hospital because I knew something was bad wrong. But you have to, in a sense, let it go. You have to say, could I have done anything different? And most of the time, you would have done things just the same with the same amount of information. You have to forgive yourself and move on.
Now, You, several years ago, and I think we had you on the air at that time, did a performance based on this material. You kind of wrote a one-man show and performed it. What are your hopes and plans with the book and with these stories?
I've actually, and what you saw, what I did here, was about 50% invented and 50% adapted from the truth. I have, for the last 15 years, been going to medical conventions and doing these stories as an after-dinner speaker or an after-lunch speaker. And what we would like to do with it is to mainstream it to more mainstream audience besides just medical, because the stories play. They work well. And I love to stand up and talk to people. And when you can talk about yourself, hey, doesn't get any better than that.
Well, do you find that a lot of other doctors can relate, or is it pretty unusual to end up in a small town situation like this?
This is a unique situation, except for people that were in that program. And the only ones I ever met were in the Indian Health Service, which offered the same scholarship, that had similar experiences that were that crazy. Because most doctors today go into a specialty, they train in a hospital for a long time, they practice in larger cities. There's not a lot of opportunity out there to survive financially and go in the middle of nowhere and be the only doctor.
I'm surprised more people don't do it.
Let me tell you the other side of it, though. While I was there, I saw an average of 45 patients a day. The record was 73 during a flu epidemic. I did not sleep through an entire night the years that I was there. I was called on the phone, and most of those nights had to actually go out and do something. It was exhausting, and I could not have kept up the pace. And I see doctors that have been in small towns all their life, and I don't know how they do it.
That's crazy, because at a certain point you would think it would impinge on the competence of the doctor, him or herself.
Oh, the doctor gets crazy. One time I did have I had paramedics in town. They came into the office with a suitcase of mine packed and said, "You're going out of town tonight." And I said, "I don't have any plans." And he said, "No, you're going out of town somewhere because you're nuts."
What were you doing that made them say that?
I don't even know what was going on then, but you just can't keep up that pace indefinitely without getting a little wacko yourself.
Now, at that time, did you have your own family or were you alone?
No, I did have a family there. I was married with one child who was very young. Did not see them very much because I was working 24 hours a day.
It really does bring up, when one reads this book, and this is what you said 30 years ago, this was the
1980s?
Yeah.
Yep.
The question of small town medical care in general, especially in a poor state like New Mexico. What did it look like then versus now?
Well, there's then it was entirely different because all the healthcare was done by physicians. You had to be a doctor. We didn't have mid-level providers. Nowadays, I think there's good news and bad news. Physicians are not trained to practice medicine the way that's required in a small town, because you really do have to be a true generalist. And now the training is all towards specialty training. And that doesn't lend itself to practicing in small towns. The good news is, with nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, we're able to get the healthcare to those areas. In fact, in Benton today, there is a large clinic. There's 5 full-time doctors, and there were 3 full-time nurse practitioners. One quit because it was too busy. But that's what's helping fill the gap. And I imagine in the future we're going to see mid-level providers do the majority of care in rural areas.
You just said what's good about that. Is there anything that patients miss when they don't have a doctor in the town?
As long as there's somebody doing healthcare, and I'll tell you, my personal experience with both physician's assistants and nurse practitioners is that they are as competent for 98% of the things that go wrong as a physician is, and they tend to be a little more thorough because they don't have the M deity or deodity behind their name. And
Did you just say M deity?
M deity, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Or if you're a Dio, a deodity behind your name. But so they tend to be a little more conscientious about workup, and they also tend to not have the ego issues sometimes doctors do, so they're easier to deal with. So I think it's a win-win situation.
Charles Maynard is author of the new book Adventures of a Small Town Doctor, and once again he will be at Collected Works Bookstore on Saturday, this Saturday the 12th of September at 6 in the evening. Collected Works Bookstore on Galisteo Street on the corner of Water. Wonderful bookstore, wonderful book. Charles, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. By the way, the event is a benefit for KSFR.
That's true, it is, but we'd love to see people there.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to Studio X for their technical support and web design.